Election Subcommittee, RFP for Big Papio Tributary Culverts. The notification of the Open Meetings Act, a copy is on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning the agenda for tonight's meeting, I'd like to announce the procedure to be used for this meeting with respect to each agenda item. The directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations, and the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, directors will discuss the item and take action. We ask that the public not interrupt the director's discussion and action. Thank you. With that, quorum call, please.
Conley.
Here.
McCormick.
Here.
Chairman.
Here. Adoption agenda, motion?
So move.
Second.
Moving to second, roll call.
McCormick.
Yes.
Conley.
Aye.
The chairman.
Yes. Somewhere here is a proof publication. There it is. Proof publication, this meeting has been duly advertised. Item six, contract with Houston Engineering for Big Papio Tributaries Culverts. We have Martin Cleveland.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. As you're aware, you actually selected Houston to negotiate with, so we've been working this last month to work out a contract with them to cover all the tasks that are involved. Basically, what they're going to be doing is, from start to finish, you might say it's including all the design aspects, permitting, right-of-way acquisition, and then also construction administration. So it's kind of from start to finish. So in the past, we did some contracts that we've had basically the design part split out. In this case, in talking to Houston, we decided it was actually better just do one contract. Then they come back to you later and say we need to do an amendment or another phase. Let's just do it as one. If they have a good solid numbers for these things, let's just do it one time. And so this one is a little more money because we're including everything, not just the design aspect of it. So it's a big chunk of money, as you can see, $880,769. But we did compare that to previous projects they've worked on for us, and the cost is about the same per culvert. Past culverts, the last project they worked on is about $35,000 per culvert. This one's about 37. So it's roughly the same amount of money per culvert if you want to look at the actual cost to get that design aspect and construction part done. And so I don't know if you want to see the maps for these, where these are at. If you do, we can show it to you. Otherwise, I won't waste your time with looking at maps. It's your call. There's 24 structures at three different project sites, the West Branch, Big Papio, and also Little Papio. So we do have the maps that they're like about six maps. If you want to look at them, we can have Bill go to those.
I'm sure, okay, the maps. We kind of know what map, you know, from the proposal where they are.
Okay, they're in there. I just wanted to give you an opportunity if you needed it. And if you want, we can look at the cost table or the schedule or both. Also, Lindy Rogers with Houston is here to help me with answering questions. She's the one that we work with to, of course, prepare the actual contract. We then negotiate and talk about different aspects of it. So Amanda and I worked on that with Lindy. But both of us can try to answer any questions you have, or we can look at the cost table or the schedule.
I've got a quick question. City of Omaha is reimbursing us. Do you know approximate of this, how much?
Right. What their share would be, because they have six culverts out of 24, roughly it'd be about $220,000. You know, that would be, it's all kind of based upon the actual construction cost of these culverts. So once Houston does their calculations a little more farther down the road, we have a better idea. But right now, just to say, as a disproportionately, it'd be about $220,000. Papillion's share is about $74,000. The district share is about $580,000 of this engineering activities. We haven't presented this to the city yet because we're trying to get them still to sign off on the phase two or phase B, phase two actually, or phase B, or group B, group B culverts. So that's actually later tonight. We'll have another thing on that. It's interlocal agreement. So we haven't presented this to them yet, even though they know it's coming down the road. It's kind of like one step at a time, you know, one request at a time. But the city knows about this, they know it's coming, the city planning knows about as well. It's going to be something we're going to ask them to cost share on. So, again, most of these are going to be district culverts, unfortunately, but there is some city share that's going to be helpful to pay part of the cost. Likewise, in construction, the same thing. They're going to be paying their share of the construction costs, but that's all based upon once we get some actual hard numbers from Houston. At this point, they haven't really started design, so they don't know anything about what the actual numbers are going to be, but we will down the road. And once we get those numbers, then we'll present that to the city and say, here's our proposed agreement on this project to have you cost share on it, like we did with these little Pappy ones. Again, the city knows about it. They have financial restraints and problems with getting money for things, but they know that there's a need to share on it because, you know, this is their culvert, so. But, okay. Any other questions?
So programs, projects and operations item number 8 is also regarding culverts and so forth. And can you give me a Cliff's Notes version of what's the difference between this and what we're doing in number 8 over here?
Right. Good question. It's actually really confusing to me that we do it the same night.
Right.
But this particular project is actually a new start. It's a totally new project. We haven't done any work on it. The one on the next agenda is actually an old project we were working on called Little Papio Project. It's not Big Papio, but it's Little Papio. And so that particular project, we're actually asking the city to sign an amendment to the interlocal agreement to pay for the cost of Group B culverts, which is that section of culverts that we're working on right now as far as design goes. And so that's like an older project, whereas this Big Papio is a newer new project. It's a new start. So it's kind of like they are both culverts, and they're both, some does involve Little Papio, but unfortunately their names kind of sound the same to me. It does as well. So it is confusing, but it's a different thing. It's agreement with the city, actually.
So this first item, we've never done anything with this in the past, or what?
Not with this particular project. This is, we have selected a consultant. This is what you did in May and March. And so this is a brand new start, even though it does involve some Little Papio project culverts and some Big Papio and West Branch. It's kind of we call Big Papio and tributaries because it's not just the Little Papio, but we found more Little Papio culverts, unfortunately, that had problems, so that's why we have this project called Big Papio and Tribs project. So
different culverts.
It's right. Different culverts, certainly different culverts, and again, that other project is the existing one that's been worked on for a couple of years by Houston, and the city's had an agreement, also an amendment to agreement, so this is actually like a third agreement with the city on that same project called Little Papio.
Has it always been the fact that we are responsible for certain of these culverts and they're responsible for certain ones? Who determined that at one point?
What we do is it's kind of jointly with probably Houston and some of the guides we have, but we look at the culverts that are in the actual project maps for the channel project are ours. So if they're actually listed as a project that's not tied to storm sewers, it's our structure. If it's tied to a storm sewer, then it's city's structure probably. And so it's kind of a case by case. We look at each structure and we say, okay, does that go beyond the levee right of way? If it does, then it's probably city's. If it's in our right of way only, then it's probably our structure, especially if it's in our own and manual when the project's built, like our project. Now, there are some culverts out there that are kind of what I call private. Some person a long time ago put these culverts in. The city doesn't own them. We don't really own them, but if we don't take care of them, the Corps says, you got a problem, guys, because you're not taking care of these culverts. But there's actually no ownership track that you have, or like a chain of ownership that you can actually look at and say, who put this structure in? And it was put in like 50 years ago. Who put it in? So we're taking the responsibility for those what we call private culverts that no one has any ownership to. That's not city ownership. It's actually just ours, I guess, because no one else would take ownership for them. So it's
but there's some consistency as a who's culvert this is and whose that is.
Right. Years ago, the NRD actually had a memo that I think Marlon Peterman at the time worked on. They said, okay, we've had some problems here deciding who owns what. And so they actually had a memo that said, if it goes out beyond the levee right of way, it's tied to a storm sewer, it's actually the city's, it's not ours. So Marlon did this thing years ago with the city because this became an issue. Every time we look at something, they say, well, it's yours. No, it's yours. And it's like, oh, who is this? And so Marlon said, we got to resolve this because we got a problem here with who's doing what. So that came out about 10 years ago, or maybe 15 years ago. It's quite a while ago that was decided. And that it was helpful to kind of formulate for the rest of the days down the road who's going to do what. So,
okay. So we're in a complete agreement with the City of Omaha as to who does what then?
Right, that's all is decided when we do these agreements, so.
Biggest concern. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Ted, with the maps help, or do you?
Yeah, I looked through the maps. Yeah, I've looked through the maps.
Oh, now you don't need this.
He's right here, so it's easier to ask him to make sure I'm reading it correctly.
Okay.
Chairman?
So, this is a new paradigm for the contract of construction management as well as engineering.
Right.
We've not done that prior?
In the past, what we did is we separate out the design from the construction administration.
So, explain to me the synergies of the things, why you feel this is great, or Lindy can help?
The reason why last time we did it, we said, okay, we don't really know the cost of things well. We first started this out, this is a new thing we're doing. Let's be fair to the consultant as well as to the district and not have a contract out there that we're not really sure of cost yet. And so that's why we waited till the design phase and then did a second phase called construction administration. Now that we've had actually a couple of projects with Houston, they have a better idea what known costs are, and Lindy can kind of confirm, but she was confident that we could actually do this and not get in trouble in terms of have to come back to you and say we need more money. That's the goal. We don't want to come back to the board twice and say, hey, we need more money because we didn't figure enough money in this contract. So
sure.
Maybe say what you told us at the meeting.
This has happened between the ad hoc selection and now.
Correct. Okay. Lindy Rogers, Houston Engineering. I kind of felt like we have gone through this enough that I have pretty solid numbers on what the construction phase is going to cost us per culvert and the timeline that it's going to take to do that. And so in order to save money for our time and money for Martin and us having to come back, it just seems easier to put it all in since I'm confident with that number. You know, I think every time we stand up here and ask for amendment, regardless if it's for a new phase or whatever, it just... It always sounds like you're asking for more money, even though if it's a new task. So I just thought it would be easier to put it back in. And we did have discussions about keeping it in or taking it out. So we're fine with it either way, but my confidence is that we know that number's going to work for us and for you.
And so the pros are that you're aware of what the construction takes. You've done this before, and we can move ahead with this because we're not gonna see change orders, or you won't have to come back before the board.
That's my goal, of course, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But there's no guarantee?
I mean, there's never a guarantee depending on if the contractor totally screws up and is out there for 16 months, which we obviously will work everything we can do to not make that happen. But I think it's beneficial to have a shorter time frame for the construction period, to make sure they're not leaving and coming back and they're more efficient with their work. And so, telling them that as well, that we've got this set already, is somewhat beneficial as they start the project.
I'm a proponent of streamlining the process, but wanted to make for the record that there are actual pros.
Okay, yep.
Any other comments before we ask for a recommendation? Okay.
Move for staff recommendation.
Second.
All right. Any public comments? Staff, directors? Roll call.
Conley.
Aye.
McCormick.
Yes.
Vice Chairman.
Yes.
Thank you.
Item 7. This committee is adjourned. There you go, Fred.
All right. We'll move on to the program projects and operations subcommittee meeting, April 9, 2024. Meeting called to order. Item number 2, notification of open meetings. I think Jim stated that, and I'll use the same statement. Item number 3, quorum call.
Yeah.
Here.
Teaser.
Here.
Thompson.
Here.
And Chairman.
Here.
Here. Item number 4, adoption of agenda.
So moved. Second.
A motion and a second. Roll call.
Teaser?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Aye. We got proof of publication of tonight's meeting, which will become part of the permanent record. Item number 6, amendments to Appendix H, Rules and Regulations, Rural Water Supply System. Justin Novak.
Good evening, Chairman, Good evening, directors. So this is kind of our annual review of the rules and regulations for the rural water systems for the NRD. We didn't really have any policy changes this year, but what we did have is changes to our rates and rate structure and connection fees. And kind of give you a little background on this. Washington County 1 and number 2 have not adjusted their rates since 2013. So we have, obviously incurred a lot of additional costs from the city of Blair with their new rates. MUD as well has continually gone up here the last couple of years especially. And so now we have to really review our rates and see what we can do to make changes that will have minimal effect, but also have, I'll say, a good impact overall for the water systems. And so what we were looking at doing is we always had a descending rate. And so the more water you use, the cheaper that water got, which seems a little bit counterintuitive when you talk about conservation. And so the people that are, high water users tend to be, acreage owners that have sprinkler systems. And that's what you'll see a lot with, especially in the Washington County rural water systems. You'll see these people that are using 50 to 100,000 gallons a month just to water their yard, but they're getting a break, at $2.10 per 1,000 gallons and $1.83 per 1,000 gallons. So they're getting this water at a substantial reduction, but also causing undue stress with our water systems. Last year, our water system on number one, the pump house on the mornings, was running full bore. We were pumping as much water as we possibly could. So we're looking at ways to maybe deter some of this excessive use. And the best thing we came up with was a flat rate system. And the good thing with the flat rate system is the average family that uses that 10,000 gallons or less a month that's just doing, their business, will see no effect with their rates or their bill month to month. A guy that's using 100,000 gallons a month will see a substantial increase, or what it will do, hopefully, is deter some of his excessive water use. So that's, excuse me. So that's kind of the goal with the rate structures in that change. It is a substantial difference. You're going to get rid of that $1.83 per 1,000 gallons and go to $4.95 per 1,000. So it, like I said, it doesn't change things for the average consumer, but it will change things, hopefully, for the people that are abusing our water systems. So the second part we had to look at was when we go to a flat rate system, the way we bill Fort Calhoun and Lakeland Estates Water Company is actually based upon the over 50,000 gallons. And so what we did is we went and reviewed our agreement with the city of Fort Calhoun, looked at what the rates should be per that agreement from that lawsuit that we had there in 2014. And so we calculated all that up, and we came down to $2.23 per 1,000 gallons. I attended the city of Fort Calhoun council meeting, and they obviously were in agreement. It is, not really much of an option for them because it is a signed agreement, and then we were actually enforcing that agreement. So, but they understood the changes that were needed. So we're going to have a wholesale rate for like Fort Calhoun, Lakeland Estates Water Company, Village of Rosalie, and those places as well, but then just have a flat rate for the rest of our consumers. So that's kind of the big change that we're looking at doing. I think it is a good change for our water systems. I think, hopefully it'll deter some of this excessive use. And then we also did some small changes to the connection fees. You have to cover your costs for materials installation, and then also try to make a little bit of money that will help pay for additional upgrades to the system. So that's kind of the big thing that we did this year. Other than that, I think, we didn't change any of the policies itself. So we just really wanted to focus on getting the rates changed this year to make it more, I'll say, equitable, but conservation oriented really is what we're looking at doing. So any questions?
And Justin did meet with the city of Fort Calhoun.
Yep.
And discussed this with them, he attended council meeting, talked to them, worked with the mayor, and they were in agreement that this needed to be done. So
yep. So
does this impact Blair or just
we buy water?
So we purchased system number 2 purchases water from the city of Blair. Okay. System number 1 purchases it from MUD. And so, obviously, Blair's looking at doing different rate structures as well. They're actually going to an ascending rate. So the more water you use, the higher your rate will be, actually. So they're going the other way, which potentially someday down the road we might have to as well. So,
have you accounted for these increases in this?
So the way I looked at the increases, You know, the biggest increase, you know, we're still making money. We're still, we're still financially viable. The problem was more with our wholesale accounts. So, like, Fort Calhoun was paying $1.83, and we're paying $2.01. So that's not sustainable. So then we had to go to our agreement, looked, and, you know, we ran all the calculations. Kerry did a great job with all that. And that's where the $2.23 came from. The $4.95, I think we can still sustain our system very well, even with those increases. And like I said, the 70% of the users on our system will never know a difference. But those other 30% people will start to feel some of that. But yeah, we'll continue to make more money. My projections with the changes with Fort Calhoun, Lakeland Estates Water Company, and just the if the consumers keep doing what they're doing, we're probably in that additional $80,000 to $100,000 in additional revenue.
At the 495 rate?
Yep.
And then those are the two wholesalers?
Yes.
Customers.
So there's, if you look at them, Thurston County is actually the village of Rosalie. Dakota County doesn't have the one. Washington County is Fort Calhoun on number one. And then Washington County number two is Fort Calhoun and Lakeland Estates Water Company. Those are the wholesalers. And the reason we give them a discounted rate is they actually maintain the infrastructure past the meter pit. So, you know, that's...
They have their own water system.
Yep, exactly. Director Japp?
What's the feedback from the public on this in general?
You know, we haven't sent this out for public meetings, but all the people that I've spoke to think this is a great thing. I think, you know, most people understand the precious commodity of that water is. Right. And, you know, to have sustainability in your system from people that are, I'll say, abusing it, essentially, is a good thing to deter some of that excessive use.
I mean, it's still cheap, though, because that might
be extremely cheap.
San Diego, and they were paying $400 or $500 a month for nothing. You know?
Yeah. Well, I went to a Nebraska Rural Water Conference here a few weeks ago, and Lancaster County Rural Water is having extreme issues with their water system right now, and it seemed like it was kind of almost like an omen. You know, the guy's talking about how they allowed all these additional acreage communities to develop that are 2 to 3 acres, you know, and there's 30 homes on there. Well, these are the people that move from the city, and they have sprinkler systems for their entire yard. Well, they're causing so much stress on the system that there actually is moratoriums on adding new accounts. They've got severe restrictions in place on when you can actually water, but these people still won't abide by the rules. And so he's actually driving around at 2 o'clock in the morning trying to catch people not doing their water alternations that they're supposed to be doing and assessing $10,000 fines that these people are paying it. And then he also adjusted the rates to where, you know, people that are over 50,000 gallons a month are paying $250 per 1,000 gallons.
Per 1,000?
Per 1,000. And they're still paying it. He has one guy that paid a $16,000 water bill every month just to keep his grass green. So these are problems that you don't want to incur in a water system, and so you really have to be kind of diligent on what you allow for development and how you deter some of this excessive use, because when you start getting into quantity issues or pressure issues, then you start having violations with the state, and then we have a lot of problems. So hopefully we can deter some of that. You know, obviously we're looking at, we're doing the studies and things with expansion potentially of System 2 that will help System 1. So a lot of things in the works right now, but this is kind of, a base change that hopefully will help.
I have one more thing. How does this compare to Thurston and Dakota County rates?
So those rates haven't really adjusted yet. Pender's hasn't changed their rates here in the last couple of years. Dakota County's I know is going to change because they're drilling a new well as we speak. And so those rates are roughly about $1.40 per 1,000. And that's what Blair's are, and MED is actually the highest. So.
Any idea what's going to be around Cramper Lake, that new one up there, what that will come out to be?
As far as water rates, you mean?
Yeah.
We're not exactly sure what the water usage is going to be. We don't expect it to be that much because it's just, you know, taking showers and toilets and things. They don't have a full hookup, so like if you had it hooked into a sewer, they would probably consume more water. We're guessing probably in that 20,000 gallons a month, probably during peak time. It's kind of my guess, but we'll find out this year because it's going to be operational. It's almost great. Done. So, yep.
Do you have a question, Jim?
The over 50,000, the different categories, are there a large number of users in that? And will they, the rate's almost double, more than double.
Yeah, so there's, I would say, about, it depends on the time of year. You know, it's always in the summertime, but, you know, about 10% of your users were getting over that, which doesn't sound like much, but when you think about the terms of thousands of gallons, it's significant.
Sure.
It really is. And, you know, what'll happen is I hopefully people will be more conscientious about what they're doing with their water, you know, and being conservative, not watering when it's raining, just letting the sprinkler system go, because ultimately that's what it is. When these water systems were designed, even in this newest one, in the system two, they were never designed for sprinkler systems. So, you know, you base your water system design on 1,500 users. Well, we have about 1,100 users on that system right now, and probably half of them have sprinkler systems. But it was never accounted for. And so that's kind of the pickle you're in, is right now we're good, but at what point aren't we, you know?
And one other thing, you've said we haven't presented these to the public. So should the committee and the board approve these?
So I guess
what's a plan to roll it out as far as, are they just going to be surprised?
Well, and
or
so I guess
they be here presented
a
comments?
Little, yeah. So I presented a little bit to the public. We did do it with the advisory boards, Dakota counties. Thurston counties is dissolved right now. We're trying to get hopefully that back together. Washington County, we didn't have enough for a quorum, so we did try to present it to the advisory boards, and that's why we're going to make the rate, you know, change effective June 1st. So the rates wouldn't actually be changed, you know, for another couple months, and that would go out, you know, with a notice in their next bill. So at least they knew, you know, starting here in 45 days, that you would still, you know, that way you're prepared. You just don't get a bill that's, hey, surprise. But at least you would be notified that in 45 days, you know, your rates are going to change to a flat rate. So like I said, the average consumer, 75% of the people, nothing will change for them. It's only your water abusers that will.
We can have a motion.
You'll probably feel some pushback when it comes, and if it's approved by the board and then there's large public outcry, I guess you revisit it, or you just, that's the rules, because that's what it costs.
It's just the cost of doing business sometimes, you know, but I don't think there'll be much of a pushback. Because, like I said, the average consumer won't know a difference. It's going to be the people that are truly abusing our water system, you know. But hopefully it'll make them more conscientious of what they're doing, you know. Our water systems are designed to sustain life, not sustain green grass. So
they've got Ted's number.
And Ted's got my number, so.
We can have a motion. Motion. Got a second?
Second.
Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Roll call.
Thompson?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Hi.
Thank you, Director.
Thanks a lot. Thanks. Item number 7, PAPIO NRD Policy Manual Revisions. Amanda?
Good afternoon. So for consideration tonight are some revisions to the NRD policy manual, and we're just trying to do this every year or about every year so that we can keep it updated and not have so many things when we go to do an update. So I'll just run through the things that we've got listed. In the 15 section of the policies, it's all about purchasing. And we're recommending removing policy 15.3 for purchasing personal property, just because that's already covered in policy 15.6, where it really outlines, you know, the dollar amounts and the how you get bids for each thing, and personal property is included in there. So we just didn't think we needed to repeat that. Also removing 15.5, purchasing of repair services, and just, again, utilizing that layout of the 15.6 that really lays out how to what you need to do for each amount of dollars that's estimated. So I think those were just kind of things that were in there that repeated themselves. So we'll just, if approved, plan to use policy 15.6 as the overall guidance. And then another note, we removed the requirement for bid openings to be at least 1 week prior to the next subcommittee. And we do understand that there's some time needs to be there so that, you know, a bidder could object, or you know, there's time for analyzing the bids, there's times for bidders to object should they need to. But really, it was another number in there. We're just trying to simplify. We already have to have our board memos done 6 days prior to the subcommittee, so it really just gives one more day of flexibility, not a large issue. Though, and so that those 15 policies, just to note, those would be laid over until May. And so if approved, those would not take effect until May. Now, the next items would take effect immediately after the board, if approved. And these are increasing the district cost share for Celebrate Trees to a maximum award of $3,000 and a maximum per tree of $300. Used to be $2,500 and $250 per tree. That's just costs we're seeing and feedback from the folks that use the Celebrate Trees program. And then Appendix E, the Manual of Standard Forms, really didn't change that much in looks, except for thanks to Jen for all her work to update all the forms and make them all links that are fillable PDF files. So if you have anybody, constituents that are looking for a form or want to use a form, it's very easy now on the website. You just, instead of scrolling through all the forms, you can just click on that one and it takes you right there. You can fill it out online. So that was just an update to the forms. And then the Appendix J safety manual has been recommended to be revised by the safety committee. And those changes include increasing safety boot allowance from $200 to $250, use of a back brace for certain district operations, some wording for the MSDS material data sheets. We used to have them in the car, but now there's an app. You can have them on the phone, so just updating for that. And then just adding a note about if there is a district staff involved in an accident, there potentially could be some training that management recommends for that person. So those are the changes. Again, the policy would be held over, policy stuff be held over to May. The others would be immediate if approved, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thanks, Amanda. Any questions?
Yeah. Would you refresh my memory and Celebrate Trees, what it is?
Yeah, and Terry runs that program, but Celebrate Trees is, there's just applications, and they it's a little bit bigger trees, I believe, than the ones that we sell when we do the tree program. These are bigger and people apply for them. So they, you know, I don't know, they're maybe 3-inch, 2-3-inch diameter type trees. Mostly, I would say parks. I've seen cemeteries. I don't know. Justin, do you have any other?
So I used to work with the Celebrate Trees program. Basically, it's for nonprofit organizations, government entities, for public right-of-way or public areas, parks, those kinds of things, to plant, you know, larger trees, like she said, 2-3-inch caliper trees, but that's for the cost of the tree and the installation of the tree. And so, but yeah, it's all public space is where those are planted. So that's the difference.
Thanks.
Larry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering, what species of trees are being planted?
In Celebrate Trees, I think that's, it can be anything, because it's like when we order trees, we order certain species and things like that. But Celebrate Trees is a little bit different. I think it can be anything.
Yeah. They have to put a planting plan in with the application, and they list the species and things like that.
So. We can have a motion.
I move staff recommendation.
Okay. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Roll call.
Jeff?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Aye. On to the next item. That's item number 8. Interlocal agreement with the City of Omaha for the Little Papio Culverts Group B. Martin?
Okay. This memo is a good start, maybe, how we talk about this. This is the project, the existing project we've been working on for a couple of years now. And so in 2021, we did the initial contract with the city. Maybe go up a little bit further to the upper end. There you go. May 2021, the board approved an agreement with the city to cost share, basically, for design of these structures. There's actually 46 culverts. And so then in December of that same year, we had another agreement with the city for construction. So there's actually then design, then construction of Group A. Now we're talking about Group B, which is another 26 culverts out of the 45. The initial Group A was 19 culverts. So we're doing the second half, basically, of the project. Maybe go down to the bottom, if you could, Bill. Maybe go to the actual table, if you wouldn't mind. Amanda likes tables, so we're going to do a table here. Hope, I don't know if we can see this or not, but maybe you can enlarge it some. So this is kind of a cost sheet that shows the cost of different phases. One is called design of the culverts, and that's the initial section A. And so right now the city, we need to do an overrun. It's an overrun basically is what it is. We need to get additional money from the city for their share of the design. That's $87,538.85. And so that's the first part of this amendment is really doing some overrun issues. The one is design and then the group A overrun as well. Go down to the next section B there, Bartville. Okay, now there's a, right there, there's a cost overrun of $330,344.66. So what's happened here is the agreement for group A actually had a maximum of $2.4 million. What in reality happened is the construction cost more, so we had more money to be paid out. So we're asking the city to pay their share of what was actually paid out to the contractor, $330,334.66. Then go down to the next page, wouldn't mind. Now we're talking about group B, which is this new project, which hasn't been done yet. I mean, we've did the design, but we haven't did the actual construction yet. Their share of the project is $4.28 million. Of that's roughly $4 million is construction, and then there's engineering of $280,000. So there's a 4.2 number there. And so go to the last page.
Almost
last
4.3.
Table. So this last table, actually the last page, shows you all the costs, basically. This is from the culvert design. I call it overrun is kind of the thing, or balance or overrun. And then group A, which is the overrun of construction costs, is $330,000. And then there's number three is actually showing what they haven't paid yet on this project, because they have a max of $800,000 per year. So because there's $800,000 per year, it takes a while to get it paid off, unfortunately. It's kind of like an installment plan. And then so group B then is this next price of $4.2 million is what this new, the new start, I call it the new, not new start, but the group B stuff, which is what we designed but we haven't built yet. And so the total cost that they're going to owe, the district will be owed by them at some point, it is owed with this amendment, is $6 million roughly. And this last table shows you what they're going to pay per year. So we've asked them multiple times, can you increase that above $800,000? And they say no. This is all our bonding will allow us to do. So we've showed you, we're showing you, I guess it's going to take a while to get this paid back, but they're going to pay us back, just a matter of, you know, what year it is. And so we're looking at, what is that, 8 years, something like that, 9 years. But it's quite a few years, in other words. But so this amendment tonight is actually, or today, is talking about the group B culverts plus these overrun things. And so the total on this is actually, if you look at the a motion, is actually $4.6 million. So again, they're paying for their share of the project. There's actually a district share, too. Then we have to be paying for district culverts, but this is their share. And so we're trying to get them to pay for their part of the culvert project. And the staff has been, they're on board with it. So we do have to go through the course of the process with the council and the mayor and all that kind of stuff. But we're assuming that they'll be supportive if the staff is supportive. And so tonight we're asking, today we're asking you to basically approve this motion to allow this new amendment to this construction agreement with the city for its interlocal agreement. So now I give you all this information. Now I get some questions, I'm sure. So. Yes.
Okay, so I see a lot of engineering costs here. Yeah. Who's doing the engineering?
Well, Houston's did the engineering to this point. So there was the group A is basically that's all done. Now we're working on still on group B because it hasn't built yet.
Right.
They've been doing work on that. So B is still kind of happening. And then the new project you're thinking of, probably the other project, is a different project. This
yeah,
is,
I know that.
Yeah.
But I think you see engineering costs.
Yeah.
Who is the engineer on this project?
That's Houston.
Yeah. They're doing this one too.
Yeah. So maybe go back to that next page before this, Bill, just so you can kind of see what Group B actually is again. Group B has two parts. One is the city of Omaha. There's 13 culverts and there's 13 NRD. So see, that's their split of the cost is 4.2, but it's going to be 3.9 of construction and then $300,000, yeah. That's how it's kind of split out. So they're, you see, we're paying a lot of, district's paying a lot of money as well, but they're basically paying half the project, you might say, roughly half.
How many years is this going to take?
This work is actually going to be bid out, we hope, this spring. Lindy's here. And it'd be, but the rest of this year, maybe, and maybe a little more than that.
We're still waiting on the 408 from the Corps. We submitted it over a year ago. And
That's the rest of the story.
It should be, I mean, we should have it. I keep saying this, but it keeps getting delayed for whatever reason. But we'll just need the time to bid it, and then we want to get out for construction. I was hoping to have it out by bid by February.
So how do we budget that if we don't know exactly when it starts or when it ends?
That's a challenge. We actually bid a little money for a start this year, but not a lot. We just bid enough money, we thought, to get the project started, because we knew we're going to be getting this stuff to the Corps like midsummer. We thought we'd get maybe approval like January, February. The Corps, unfortunately, has been painfully slow to approve things, and so we're trying to work through those difficulties with the Corps, but it's been really difficult. It's been about 9 months or something like that so far. But if we get it out for bid this spring, we will maybe spend $100,000 or so of mobilization fees and that type of thing. Won't be a lot, because we did budget more than probably $100,000 for this year's start of the construction. Not a lot, but just start of the construction. So it is always hard to time that, because it's like, how do you predict someone else's permitting schedule? And that's the thing. The Corps is, we need to plan for long periods, because they take long times to do things.
Thank you.
So.
You finished, Martin? You finished your presentation?
Yes. So we're going to spend 800, or the city's going to owe us 800 for 8 years.
Right.
800 for 7 years, 800 for 6 years, 800 for 5 years, 800 for 4 years, 800 for 3 years, 800 for 2 years, 800 for 1 year. At a 7%, that's about $20 million.
If it goes that many years, maybe they're...
Well, I thought that's the schedule you showed.
Well, it's actually like 9 years, isn't it? You may go back to that table. It's not. It's like 9 years, but it's a lot of years.
It's more.
Yeah. This is what the amount of years is, 2024 through 31.
Just...
I agree it's a lot of years. And we tried to talk to them and say, can you go up some? Can you increase it some? And they said, well, we've got this bonding limits or something like that. They have a certain bond that they use for this work, and they said that's all we can do. And
so we're financing the city to the order of,
right, we're actually,
the money is $20 million.
District's financing it. The thing they've actually asked the district is, can you cost share on this? It's like, really, this is your culverts. You want us to pay 60% of your costs? So we've kind of shut them down on that, but they've actually said, can you make this work a little easier for us? Can you pay part of the cost of our culverts? Of the city culverts, it's like, I don't think so. These are your culverts. So they've actually asked that question, because they're struggling for the money too. They're trying to find the money. They know they have a responsibility, but they say, you know, this is not as important to us as maybe you is, because we have to satisfy the Corps. They don't really, their stake in it is not as critical probably, because they still have a storm sewer that's deficient, but they think, you know, it's not that big a deal to us compared to you. You know, the NRD has more of an interest in getting it done, because we have a channel project that's deficient. And so we're trying to resolve this flood control deficient structure. But their interest maybe isn't quite as great as
ours. And we're in an interlocal agreement that requires us to do this. We can't separate theirs out and put them 8 years later when they have the money.
Well, the problem is with the Corps of Engineers standards on maintaining the structure according to the standards.
And these are city culverts.
These are city culverts, but...
So the Corps of Engineers will have an issue with the city.
Well, they view it as our project.
No, with us, because we're the project sponsor of the
budget. The sponsor of the project, so they don't care who actually owns it. They say it's your responsibility, NRD, because it's your project. So I know what you're saying.
So we're a sponsor to take the burden off the city, but the city does not want to pay their share. They want us to carry the cost.
They want us to finance them, basically. Yeah. That's what they're asking.
The burden is ours, according to the Corps. The Corps doesn't care. But so if the city don't fix them, then the Corps would say your levies are deficient, and they kick us out of the program, regardless of what the city did or not. So that's what kind of we're stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah. We should use more leverage to get the city to pay. That's all.
I don't know what we have. I don't know what, I mean, they could just say we don't, okay, we're not doing any of it. I mean, the city could just refuse.
There's
that's a big number.
The PL 8499. So if they're in the program, if a major flood occurs and there's damage, the Corps will fix that at 100% Corps cost. If we're not in there, yeah. So for example, we were actually talking about this pre-2019 flood. Is this program really worth staying in? Remember that, Martin?
Yeah.
And then the flood hit, and obviously $30 million levy repairs, you know, $10 million.
Yeah.
It was worth it. So we don't want to be part of the program. Then we have an event, and now that all that cost is on us to fix them. And that could be who knows what. Depends on the damage.
District spent a couple million dollars, but they spent like $20-some million on like Union Dyke and Big Papio projects. I mean, they spent a lot of money. So even though I really get...
I don't disagree we should maintain the levies. I disagree that Omaha should not have to pay.
I don't know what leverage we have over them. I mean, they could just say, hey, we're walking. We're not going to give you anything. Kick you out of the program. We don't care. I mean, if that's the way they want to play, I don't think they do, but we've had the discussion. I mean, they just don't have the ability to pay more. It's according to them.
Court of public opinion.
I mean, their explanation is that, so they use the sewer bond dollars for funds like for these types of things, and they have the Omaha levy is going through a big rehab and taking up all of their dollars. And every time we talk to them about it, they mention that, and then they basically say, we can't fight police and fire for money, this is all we have, and 800,000 basically took up what they say they have left. So that was how we got here.
They haven't managed their money well.
You want a second on that motion?
Any additional questions for Martin?
Who's going to keep track of all this? Eight years from now, I'm looking at Gene.
Well, Carrie, it'll be a bill that just goes on.
It's more of a rhetorical question.
They pay interest on the loan.
No, fortunately, we have Carrie. She's the herder assistant. Okay. Kyra are very good at keeping track of us.
We can give them a very favorable rate.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, there's just a lot of elements here I don't like about this, but we don't really have any choice in that. I mean, it's like you hold your nose, and what else can you do? What's our options, guys?
Pay it all ourselves and get kicked out of the program. I mean, that's your choice. Right. I mean, really, at the end of the day.
We can have a motion on this item.
I move with staff recommendation.
Can we have a motion?
I did. I just made a motion.
Oh, you made a motion?
Ted seconded it.
Oh, second. Okay.
Oh, Ted seconded?
Okay. It was sort of going round and round. Okay, we got a motion and a second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to that? Roll call.
Teaser.
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Jack?
Same thing, yeah.
And Chairman.
Hi.
Thank you.
Thank you. Item number 9, Southern Sarpy Watersheds Partnership in a Local Agreement. Ian.
Good afternoon, everyone. So I've provided a memo that has a summary of this interlocal and then the interlocal itself with the exhibits. I'm actually going to step through a PowerPoint presentation because I think it might be a little more of an efficient and painless way to kind of go through the whole partnership process and the interlocal and its exhibits. What's up here? Oh, perfect. All right. So this presentation might look pretty familiar to you. Last summer, I think June 2023, we went through the stakeholder outreach process, and as part of that, we came to the board and gave a very, very similar presentation. That outreach process went very well. We got very, little negative feedback, if any. So all this information really is the same as far as the projects and plans go that you're going to see. So I'll go through this relatively quickly, but happy to go back at the end and answer any specific questions you might have on any part of it. But first off, why are we doing this process right now? Well, the Southern Sarpy Watersheds Partnership Interlocal Agreement is expiring at the end of June of this year. So this next interlocal will cover the next 5-year period from July 1st, 2024 to July 1st, or June 30th, 2029. You may be aware that we're involved in a couple partnerships here. So a little bit of background on this one specifically, just as a refresher. First off, what area are we talking about here when we talk about the Southern Sarpy Watersheds Partnership? You can see the map up on the screen. The area in green that's outlined in blue, that is what we're calling the watershed management area. This is where all of the Southern Sarpy Watersheds Partnership policies and plans are gonna take place. This is where we collect fees as a partnership. There's those couple of specific watersheds, Buffalo, Springfield, and Zweibel Creek, that were studied as part of this project. And so roughly the area south of Cape Hark Road down to the Platte River, east of Highway 6 to about 36th Street with that kind of little tail that extends into Bellevue. So this is the kind of the area that we're talking about in terms of policy implementation, enforcement. Now, who are the partners themselves? Who's involved in this effort? Papi Missouri River administers the partnership, and then there's the cities of Springfield, Bellevue, and Papillion, Gretna, and Sarpy County. This partnership was created in 2016. It was mostly spurred by the sewers agency's plan to provide sewer service in Southern Sarpy County. That's gonna spur urban and suburban development, in turn impact the environmental and water quality of that area. And so we wanna get ahead with a watershed management plan to ensure that we're addressing any issues that are present or potential issues in the future. So the overall goal of the partnership really is proactive management of this area. And that's where the what the policies and the projects are intended to address. So that's kind of high level general, but when we talk about specific issues in this watershed, what are we really looking at here? Really the major ones, kind of been the key issue in the development of the policies, has been stream stability. So already in many areas of the watershed, you can see significant stream degradation. It's just one example, Mopac Trail Bridge, this is Springfield Creek, a lot of degradation on the banks there. So this is something that we've done a lot of outreach on. This is really, as you'll see a little bit later in the presentation, the issue that we're really trying to address with kind of the major structural policy that's part of this interlocal. And this is really, could be a key issue if it isn't addressed, the risk of, the threat to public property, to individuals utilizing these amenities, especially as the watershed builds out and you get more impermeable surface, quicker flows, more degradation. Definitely something we want to stay ahead of. So this is kind of the key issue here. So all of that, just a quick background, and that kind of leads us to the policy recommendations, just to give context on what the partnership is trying to address. A lot of these policies really are not being touched. We've had policies in place since the partnership was established in 2016. Those are based on the Papillion Creek Watershed Partnership. That one's been around for longer, so we kind of took that as a starting point. Over the last 5 years, we've been developing a more specific watershed plan for South Sarpy. And so we're just tweaking things where we feel like there's those specific issues like the stream degradation. So when you look at these policies, I'm not gonna read them all off, but I'd be happy to answer specific questions at the end if you wanna hear more about them. But most of them are based on higher requirements like floodplain management, a lot of the erosion and sediment control BMPs, state and federal requirements, requirements from FEMA, those sorts of things, just to make sure that different jurisdictions are compliant. So all of these requirements are gonna, get adopted into those specific city or county ordinances and get enforced that way. So that's where some of them come from. But one that I really wanna point out here, circling back to that stream degradation, is the construction of grade control structures is required in all streams with a drainage area more than a half square mile. That's our major structural policy. It's part of this plan. That's how we're hoping to address that potential issue of stream degradation. And going along with that, down here, I just want to focus on the grade control structure construction costs to be reimbursed by the partnership. So the fees that the partnership collects at the time of development, that money is going to get funneled into these projects to help prevent that stream degradation that we saw earlier in this presentation. Other than that, the policies have largely remained the same. The 3:1 plus 50-foot setback is kind of another major policy to help protect infrastructure and private property from that degradation, but that's been in place, and so no change there. We're just allowing some passive recreation in the outer 30 feet, trails, linear parks, that sort of thing, trying to encourage that along that sort of green space corridor. A little bit more on the grade control policy. This kind of reiterates some of what I said, but just some specific details on how it's going to work, and then a rendering on the right side. So when we're talking about grade control, we're imagining something like that picture, like a rock riffle type structure would be very common, you know, armoring a portion of the stream. So the idea would be that these structures get installed by developers at the time of development, so we're just lockstep as the watershed builds out. The partnership would then reimburse the construction costs of these structures to make it less of a burden on those developments. And then any areas that have already been platted before these policies go into effect, which would be July 1st of this year, so there are a couple areas that are already developing out, the partnership would step in and construct these types of projects itself, and then there would be no reimbursement. And so again, the intent of this is really just to prevent substantial stream degradation in the area, which we're already seeing happen, and we would anticipate would get worse as it builds out if we don't step in with something like this. So that's the policies. The next couple figures are some sort of visual representations of how this is going to, you know, spell out in the watershed. So the watershed management plan is more high level. This is full build out, what we would expect to see. So you'll recognize that green shape, that's a watershed management area. So again, that's anywhere we're collecting fees and everywhere where the policies are going to apply. All of these orange streams throughout the watersheds, those are where we would expect to see the grade control implemented or are requiring the grade control to be implemented. This purple segment right here is a more specialized project to the city of Springfield. Their infrastructure is so close to that water course that runs right through the middle of the town, and it's a bit downstream, so they're going to see, you know, those impacts a little bit quicker before the development works its way down there, that this is to kind of address some more specific channel stabilization there, make sure that's kind of an equitable share in the benefits of the partnership for that community. These areas here that are striped, they weren't studied as part of this portion of the watershed management plan, but we anticipate they're going to be studied more specifically in the future. The reason for that was just that I think the urban development is not anticipated to be entering this area in the immediate future. And then down on below of this figure, you can see it just kind of highlights some of those key policies that were on that previous slide, and then some notes on the overall management cost, just an estimate, and then the total miles of stream that are going to be impacted as part of this plan, so protected as part of this plan. The next figure here is the implementation plan. So it's going to look very, very similar. We're just basically breaking it out to the next immediate 5 years. So that last one was pretty high level, full build out. This is, well, what do we expect to get done in the next five-year period, so the next interlocal period. So again, super similar here. We've just grayed out the streams that we don't anticipate to be part of the next five-year period. These blue shaded areas is the Sarpy County Sewer Agency's projection of where we think we're going to see urban development. So as the policy would require, as these areas develop, you would get grade control along those streams at the same time. So this is where we're going to see projects implemented. We do also break out here the streams that have already been platted. So like right here is that data center in Sarpy County. So the partnership will step in and do the projects there along those dotted lines. Similarly, this dotted portion is that Oak Leaf development. So again, the partnership would be involved in constructing the grade control in this area, and then the solid streams would be ideally constructed by development, so long as nothing happens there before this interlocal is approved. Other than that, essentially the same information presented here. Again, costs specifically for the implementation plan, and then the stream miles that are going to be covered in the next 5 years. So again, it was a little quick, but all that information is something you saw last year. Happy to talk about it more, but I know it might be pretty familiar to a lot of you. And so this has been in the work for a little bit now. These next ones might not be exhibits that you've seen before, but are part of the interlocal agreement. This is the funding for the partnership. So the partnership's really funded by two main sources, partnership dues and watershed fees. Partnership dues are paid by each member. Watershed fees are collected from developments when they're platted. So, partnership dues right here. The Papio NRD always contributes one-third of the total, which is $200,000. Has contributed that amount since the inception of the partnership. So it's the same here, 33%. $66,000 is the annual contribution. And then the other members contribute relative to their specific population versus the whole population of watershed management area, and then the area of their jurisdiction versus the area of the watershed management area. So it shifts over time a little bit as you know, boundaries change and population changes a little bit. So that was just updated in this one. Relatively similar, the communities that have grown have seen an increase in their dues, but doesn't really pertain the NRD. So these funds is what goes to running kind of the more administrative side of the partnership and stormwater inspections, those sorts of activities. And then the second source here, the watershed fees. So these are what are going to be actually funding the reimbursement of those grade control structures and then also funding any sort of partnership projects like that project through Springfield or Oakleaf coming in after that development. These vary based on the type of development. So single family residential versus high density versus commercial. You can see the fee schedule there. And then we just apply a 3% increase per year just to try to keep up with CPI. So the immediate next steps for the partnership or for this next 5-year period, really kind of the big items. The plan is to have each individual partner adopt the interlocal agreement by June 30th. So it's already passed through some city councils, I believe. Others are going on concurrently right now. Then over the next 5 years, we'd really just oversee the reimbursement of those grade control projects. Each jurisdiction would adopt the policies into their ordinance. Obviously, we don't do that here. We would construct partnership-led projects in those couple of areas that have already been platted and in the city of Springfield. And then the next update would be in 2029, so we would reassess the watershed plan, make updates as needed, and readjust the interlocal at that time. So with that, any questions on anything? More than happy to go back. There's more details in the interlocal agreement, too, so we can dive into that as well. But I just wanted to kind of run through all those exhibits to make sure we were familiar with what was in the agreement.
Thank you. Questions?
Yeah. Omaha adopted a stormwater management plan. Has Harpy County adopted one to, for example, collect the first half inch of rain?
Mm-hmm.
Is that incorporated in this? The data center, for example, are they collecting stormwater on their property that will minimize as much as possible?
Yeah, so when those developments were platted, like I said, we already had interim policies in place. And so when I come back to these, most of these policies were already in place for those developments. That specific one you mentioned, that first one there, retain the first half inch of runoff and maintain peak low from the 2-year storm, they would have been subject to that requirement.
Very great, thanks.
Yep.
Any other questions?
So the 3-to-1 plus 50
yes.
feet,
mm-hmm.
You can avoid that if you have drain control structures.
I think
it was in our previous meetings, but not in this agreement.
Not in this partnership. There is an exception to the setback, but it has nothing to do with the grade control. That's part of the
well, because a developer could elect to put in more grade control that would be in reimbursed, and he still has to have the 3-to-1. Is it because I understood there was a previous program where we. For stream degradation that you could, especially if it was already developed, where you would have grade control and then and not necessarily 3-to-1 to 50,
mm-hmm.
plus 50.
So the Papio has different setback requirements, 3-to-1 plus 20 and 3-to-1. Oh, Lori, you want to jump in? Yeah.
So that was a proposed policy for the Papio partnership, and that was never formally adopted.
Okay. That's all. That's
okay.
I don't think there are any other questions, I guess. All right. Thank you. We need a motion to approve.
Motion to approve staff recommendation.
We have a motion. We have a second.
So moved.
Second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Roll call.
Thompson?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Aye. Thank you. Ian?
I've got the next one, too.
Wait, okay.
So I'll just hang out for a second.
Ready?
All right. So this is another interlocal agreement. This one a little bit simpler. I think we can just jump right to the exhibit, the map on the second page here. So this is regarding Dam Site 7, which is a future dam site. We completed preliminary design of Dam Site 7 in 2018. Not currently in final design or under construction. I think we'd anticipate it to be constructed probably around 2029, 2030 as part of the next round of Papillion Creek's priority projects. But there has been quite a bit of development in the surrounding area. And so this interlocal has to do with some public improvements as part of that development, specifically Rainwood Road, which is highlighted here in orange, which is going to bisect Dam Site 7, cut right across, and cross it with a bridge or culvert structure here. And so this interlocal covers the phase one and phase two portions of the Rainwood project, which is grading and paving on the north side right here. So the parties that are involved in it beyond the Papio NRD would be SIDs 623 and 633, Bennington Public Schools, and Douglas County. The interlocal agreement covers the various responsibilities and funding allocations for all of those parties. The Papio NRD has no financial stake in this portion of the project. So really our responsibilities per the agreement are to dedicate any right-of-way or easements that we own at this time. I don't believe we have anything to dedicate, but if there was anything that we owned they would need for the project, we would coordinate on that. And then the second portion would just be to review and approve the final plans and specs of the phase one and two, so just the grading and paving of that portion of the road. The agreement does mention a future phase three, which would be the bridge project, the bridge portion. Right here, which we would have more direct involvement with as part of Dam Site 7. But it simply states that when Dam Site 7 commences or finishes, that we would coordinate, and everyone involved in this agreement would have a subsequent agreement to address that portion of the project. So beyond really just the review and approval of the plans of this, there really is no other responsibility at NRD and no financial responsibility for this portion of the project. So the recommendation would be to enter the agreement with these parties. But are there any questions on the interlocal or on Dam Site 7 in general?
Any questions?
So will the parties in this agreement contribute to the bridge construction?
Yeah,
the
they
future
would at that
agreement?
Time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are they bound to that, or?
I don't think they're bound to it specifically as part of this agreement. I mean, the county would certainly be a stakeholder in that, as would the neighborhoods, I would think. I'm not sure what the portions would look like, and I think that's part of the reason why it's kind of being...
That was my question. Is will the proportions remain where the developer, or do we pick up the big... Because the bridge would cost more than anything else.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of an outstanding question at this point in terms of what funding would be available from each party. Definitely the county, I think, has that question as well. We have looked at, as kind of a side note, part of Dam Site 7, we looked at alternatives between a bridge and a culvert. Obviously, a bridge would be a more expensive option, and so I think we would determine the design approach we would take there, partially based on the funding that would be available from the surrounding parties. So specific allocations, kind of unknown at this time, and since the project isn't for another potentially 4 to 5 years, I think it's kind of a wait and see where things are at with each of those parties.
Would that be something you put in the initial agreement?
It's being unknowns.
Yeah,
we know there's going to have to be a culvert or a bridge.
Right, and there's no road there now, and there was no road there when Dam Site 7 was designed. So I don't feel like the Papio entity has a responsibility to build a road because there wasn't one there before. We generally have the practice if there's one there and we have to reconfigure or do something because of the dam project, then we would pay for that. So everyone here is well aware of our position and the fact that the Papio is not going to pick up the tab for a bridge, but there's all this work, there's some schools, maybe bonding issues have a lot to do with it, but there's a Bennington Elementary School at the end of Rainwood that you cannot get to at the moment. So they're really working to get this grading and paving done, and then this agreement does say, in good faith, all these parties will work on the phase three, which is the bridge. So we'll just have to keep working. The preferred alternative is a bridge, and if nobody can come up with any money, then it either won't be there or we'll have to do something different.
We can build a project without the bridge.
Excuse me?
We can build a project without the bridge. I mean, if it's left to us, if they don't want to contribute, we'll just build the project and you don't have a bridge.
How will you, the sediment basin above it?
Yeah, you could, it would be
still have to have
the same if it wasn't there anyway.
You're going to have a culvert when you build the road. that'll be adequate?
Well, I'm just saying, for our project, if they're looking at us to build the bridge, we don't have to build, we've never intended to build the bridge. That project never was intended to have a bridge.
Right.
From the initial design.
Or culvert.
Correct?
But we have a large sediment basin above the road.
We do, which we could use.
So when the road gets built, it's gonna have to have a culvert adequate to manage that water. So maybe nothing happens after the road's built.
Yeah, so, and we, in the county was a stakeholder in the preliminary design, and they've been with us through this whole thing, so they know. I mean, it's really their road, and they know what their options, it's culvert or a bridge.
That's all I had, thank you.
I had one quick question on that. Military road, is this closed, is that gonna be closed and just abandoned, or what's gonna happen with that?
I think they're gonna, there's some kind of trail plan with it, correct? All right, kinda know.
I was kinda going back to the old prelim stuff, I didn't know if you would know. So Omaha is planning to abandon military, and I think they already have in parts, and it's gonna be a part of the trail network. Once Rainwood is there for a connection.
That's not even our concern, where does this future Rainwood Road go to the east, I guess? It's like, where does it come out? It's gonna go right through the middle of a bunch of housing eventually, so.
Yeah, there is a layout for future, for Rainwood, and it goes through private property right now. Their county's in works to buy that right away.
Any other questions? We can have a motion on this item.
Another bridge number. Did you motion?
I did, yes.
Oh, second that.
Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Roll call.
Jeff?
Yes.
Keeser?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
And Chairman.
Aye.
Thanks.
Thank you. Item number 11, Giles Road Siphon Replacement Project Right-of-Way License Agreement with City of Omaha. Eric?
Good afternoon, everyone. From the memo, we've got page 2. The district purchased former railroad right-of-way along the left or east bank of the West Papio Creek for purpose of the West Papio Trail. You can see at the bottom of the map is Giles Road. We constructed the trail from Giles to Millard a few years ago. And at this time, the City of Omaha is looking to reconstruct an existing sanitary sewer siphon from the right or west side under the West Papio Creek and back up on the left or east side behind the trail toward the field. But the construction of the siphon and a permit structure will be on and under district property. And so in discussion with legal counsel, that requires approval of granting of a license agreement to the City of Omaha. The way that we acquired the right-of-way from the railroad was under the rails to trails protection from the Surface Transportation Board. We cannot sell permanent land rights to the City of Omaha from that rail corridor, so we're using a license agreement to allow the city access during construction and then permanent access for purposes of maintenance to the facility that will be directly behind the trail in this area. The city does operate and maintain the trail, but the district continues to own the land, so we've got this kind of small bit of access rights that we need to grant them. No money is anticipated to be exchanged either way, and the city will handle all of the costs of construction, operations, and maintenance of the sanitary sewer, both during and after construction. So this is a license agreement from the district to the city for the construction and then ongoing operations of the siphon in this location. That would potentially include infrequent maintenance along the trail corridor for operations of the siphon in this location.
Thanks, Eric. We can have a motion on this item.
I move a staff recommendation.
Got a motion?
I'll second it.
He
made the motion.
I'll second.
Okay. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Roll call.
Keeser?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Yes.
And Chairman.
Aye. You're up next, Eric.
Great. Next, we have the Urban Cost Share Program project recommendations. We sent out the letter annually and received applications back. So this is a summary of the applications we did receive. You can see at the top, the first program that's listed is the Urban Conservation Assistance Program. We did not receive applications to this program. This did happen a few years ago as well. It's a little surprising. This is the relatively small erosion control assistance program. So we'll communicate with local jurisdictions about, is there something within our policy that we should update to better facilitate the mutually beneficial projects that generally fall under this program? But again, this happened 2 years ago, I believe, where there were no projects submitted. So no projects submitted, no recommendation for projects this year. The Stream Crossing Grade Control Program is a relatively new program. It was available for the first time last year. We did not receive any applications. And again, we did not receive any applications this year. So we'll continue to communicate with jurisdictions about the potential use of this program. The Urban Drainage Way Program is for larger reaches of streams, for kind of more comprehensive stabilization, restoration, and water quality and habitat improvement. We received three applications, the first of which is from the City of Omaha. Bill, there is, I think there are bookmarks in this PDF. I don't know if you can access that from here. That might help make it easier to find the locations. Let's see if that works. There you go. So, yep, that's it. Perfect. So the City of Omaha applied for cost share along Eagle Run Creek, which is, there you go, 144th and West Maple, coming out of the existing culvert and then down kind of through the golf course in this area. The city has already received cost share from the 319 program and is applying for cost share from the Nebraska Environmental Trust. And the request for this project is $300,000 toward the total anticipated cost of $2.25 million. This project is eligible under the Urban Drainage Way Program guidelines. And so in discussion with Amanda, we feel it's appropriate to recommend the project because it is within the guidelines and fundamentally a good project. But the City of Omaha was notified ahead of time that we did not accept applications into this program last year because of anticipated funding constraints. And this year, we anticipated funding constraints again. And so it is more likely this year that as we go through the budgeting process in May and June, before we provide the first draft of the budget to the board, that some projects might not be included into the budget because of the availability of anticipated funding. And so the City of Omaha is aware that this is, while it does meet the guidelines, and that led to the recommendation, the anticipation for funding constraint is stronger this year than in the past. So we will consider that as we go through the budgeting process over the next couple months, and that will be true for the other projects in this program as well. The second project in the Urban Drainage Way program is from the City of Papillion. This is listed as Matthias and Delmar Creek. You can see the north and south street is 84th Street. Just to the west or upstream in the very lower left corner of this map is another stretch of the same creek that the City of Papillion applied for and was granted funding. And that project is under construction now. That's just to the north side of the water tower. And so this is kind of some ongoing work to protect the public infrastructure that is located along this stream as it runs north and east to meet with the West Papio Creek. So this is a good project. Again, it meets all of the program guidelines, but the City of Papillion is aware that if there are funding constraints, that this project may not be funded this year. We still think that it is a good project and want to recommend it for approval if that is possible. Total project cost is anticipated $545,000, and the requested cost share from the district is $218,000. This project is farther out into the future, so if it is not able to be funded in this year's budget, they might reapply next year and could be funded in the future. Last application here is from the City of Ralston and Ralston Creek. It's the only creek in Ralston, and so we have been communicating with them for the last 2 years about an anticipated application. This project has received funding from the 319 program and the Nebraska Environmental Trust and has moved quite a long ways through the design process. This is a very good project. It has a lot of benefits. It meets a lot of the objectives of the district, and so I'm very glad to have received this application and be able to recommend this one. Again, we did anticipate this. They wanted to apply last year, but the program was not available. And so they did apply this year. The request here is higher. It is the 60% because this project does help to restore the creek and provide water quality and habitat improvements, as well as recreation along the Ralston Trail in this location. Total anticipated project cost is $2 million, and the request from the district is $1.2 million. So quite frankly, this is why we anticipated funding constraints in this program this year. So the other two applicants knew that we had anticipated a very good project to apply this year. And so in prioritizing these projects based on funding availability, I think we would recommend that Ralston Creek is the most deserving project, and the other two would be kind of next in order to be considered if there is funding available in the upcoming budget. So those are the three projects that we received applications for. Generally, we do a motion and second and approval for each of the programs. I don't know if that's what we'd like to do this year or if you want to take them all together.
We haven't broken out the agenda, so we should take them individually.
Yeah.
I'd like to make a motion.
Okay.
Motion is that recommend the subcommittee recommend to the board of directors the application from the city of Ralston for $1.2 million for a total of $1.2 million subject to funding in the FY 2025 budget. That's okay. My motion.
We have a motion. We have a second.
Second.
Motion and second. Anyone wish to speak to the item?
Director Dimitri. I'm sorry. I'll wait.
Now, the reason since we don't have budget, we're not going to budget the first two. Why even bother with it? So it's Ralston's a good project. That's the reason for my motion.
Okay. Anyone from the public wish to speak to that? Roll call.
I'm sorry. For clarification, the motion is to Ralston only, but not Omaha and not Papillion.
Yes.
Correct.
Thank you.
Roll call.
Thompson?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Keiser? Yes.
Hi. Thank you very much.
Great. Yeah. A few more programs.
Okay.
You're not going to get out of here yet.
Next is the Recreation Area Development Program. These are relatively smaller dollar projects, up to 50% of the cost, maximum of $50,000. First is from the city of Bennington for a disc golf course. Same deal on the left. There's RAD is the program. Yep, there you go. And if you scroll down just a little bit, you can see some a map of the area. Most of the recreation in Bennington focuses around the Big Papio Creek. We cost shared on the bridge to connect the trail from the one side of the creek to the other. And they are now interested in building a disc golf course. That's throwing a frisbee into the baskets. This is getting more and more popular. We've received interest from other cities as well. So the idea is to build the course into the backside of the existing recreation facilities along the creek near the trail where they're focusing most of their recreation in the community. This would design and construct the course, again, kind of on the backside of the existing facilities.
How many holes?
I think it's a 9-hole course, but they anticipate the potential for future holes connected, I think, using the bridge because they... And actually, okay. The next item is to have a park and trail master plan that would anticipate additional recreation locations in Bennington. So the Recreation Area Development Program, Bill, if you've got the next one on the left. Yeah. The program does fund master planning for recreation, and you can see here they are kind of looking at where is their jurisdiction lines, where do they want to include future recreation projects. Most of it, again, is centered in that same location, but this is the first time that they would have a master plan for all of these projects. Bennington also applied for several other funding sources for other types of projects, including a large federal funding allocation for trails along the Big Papio Creek. So they're doing a good job of kind of coordinating everything together, but they don't have a master plan that specifically calls that out. So this would be the first time they would develop a park and trail master plan aligned with the work that they have been doing. And that is within the program guidelines for the Recreation Area Development Program. Next is from the Village of Homer, and they would like to construct a splash pad. This would be a multi-phase project. The first phase here is to acquire the land and then clear the land and prepare it for construction of the splash pad. So in talking with the village, they are seeking additional funding for the construction of the splash pad. And so the funding amount requested here is $24,059. We do not allow reapplications for an additional $50,000 in multiple years toward the same project. That would be something like double dipping. But we communicated with the village that if they seek additional funding for the construction of the splash pad, we would likely consider an additional application up to the single project maximum of $50,000 in the future. We don't often work with the Village of Homer, and so we're trying to find ways to be as supportive as possible. What they can do now is acquire the land and do the preparation work, and then they are applying to the Nebraska Game of Parks for some additional funding. So we're trying to be as supportive of Homer as we can toward recreation objectives that they have. I think we did a project at the ball field with them about 4 or 5 years ago. So they don't have nearly as many projects, but this is one that they are interested in. And again, it is close to the center of where all their recreation activities occur. The city of Omaha is applying for a spray ground at Lee Valley Park. Lee Valley Park is on the east side of 108th Street, north of Dodge. Here's a map of the area. Lee Valley Park used to have a swimming pool built in the 60s. It has been removed, and so they are looking, the city is looking to restore some kind of water recreation feature to the area. This is just to the west. You can see the big Papio Creek and trail, and we are working with the city on connections from Lee Valley Park down to the big Papio Trail. So again, keeping recreation facilities kind of connected and close together. And there are other facilities in Lee Valley Park in addition to the spray ground. So replacing the pool with something new and different that isn't quite as comprehensive and expensive as a swimming pool, a spray ground is what they're anticipating in this location. The request here is $50,000, which is the maximum. It's a relatively larger project overall. Their anticipated cost is $521,000. So our portion is relatively small, but they would appreciate our assistance. The city of Omaha is also applying at Zirinsky Lake for an inclusive playground. Pretty straightforward. They have a site at the lake, and they would like to construct a new playground. I believe there's a rendering or a some type of image of what the playground would look like. There you go. Modern playground design includes, you can see, more ramps, less stairs. This provides accessibility to people who use a chair or have limited mobility. So this is a new kind of type of design that a lot of agencies are moving toward. We have another one that is an inclusive playground here as well. So this is, a relatively larger project, at $369,000, and they have asked for $50,000 toward this project. That's Zirinsky. The city of Papillion at City Park, which is kind of the main park in the center of historic downtown Papillion, just west of 84th Street. They are looking at making comprehensive upgrades to City Park. I think the next page shows a couple of the upgrades that they would be making as part of this. Let's see, maybe one more. Yeah, there you go. Scroll down a little bit. Okay. So they're looking at very comprehensive upgrades across all of City Park. This is phase one, and it is the anticipated cost for phase one alone is $1.5 million. So I reference that just because Papillion is making a huge investment in City Park on the west side of 84th along the trail and the creek. And this is, I think they anticipate four phases. So they're going to be spending a lot of money in this park over the next couple of years. But this is an application for assistance with phase one. South Sioux City has applied for cost share toward basketball courts, two different basketball courts. One kind of in on the west side of town in a, if you slide just a little bit to the left on the map. Okay, there's a pin in the upper left. So there's a basketball court kind of in a residential area closer to the creek. I'm sorry, closer to the river and the park, but kind of more in a neighborhood. And then secondly, to the right over by Scenic Park, their kind of large comprehensive recreation area, a basketball court there as well. Total cost $105,000, and they've asked for $50,000 toward this combined set of two basketball courts. And then last in this program is the City of Valley. The City of Valley is also planning a comprehensive upgrade to their main central park. So they have multiple phases identified here, and they also have a $1.5 million phase one identified. And so they're asking for cost share from the district toward that. It is a small portion of the entire set of work they want to do, but this is the program guidelines, and so they've asked for our partnership in that. Phase one is just kind of the eastern portion there, sports facilities, sports courts, and then they plan more work again in the future. So very large investment in kind of regional type park recreation features is common in most jurisdictions right now. Gretna is also separately doing one, so we're seeing a lot of this type of work in basically all areas simultaneously. I guess everybody wants to have a new fun park, and we have received requests to help fund those in a couple locations this year. So there are several projects, and the recommendation is to approve the cost share identified in the memo for the several projects. The total cost share under this program would be $320,000, and that is in line with last year's cost share, which was $325,000 in this same program.
Move staff recommendation.
Motion. Move second.
Yeah, question. This is phase, this valley is phase one. We're going to get hit again for phase two, I presume.
We should probably consider that. Again, we have a individual project cap of $50,000. When you have a large central park, is phase one eligible once and phase two eligible again? That's something I think we should talk about in the future. The policy manual doesn't clearly identify multiple phases.
Why don't we talk about it now?
I'd be glad to hear recommendations. This is something that, again, multiple cities are considering multi-phase projects. And so we don't have a clear answer as to whether or not phase two in Valley or phase two in Papillion of the city park upgrades or another phase of the, I cannot remember the name of the park in Gretna, but they have all got these kind of multi-phase things. And we do not have a clear answer as to whether or not an additional application to an additional phase in the future in the same park area is or is not within policy guidelines right now.
You guys can address that, Rich, if it comes back again.
Okay.
If the phase two comes back, you can address that and say, hey, we've already given you. Yeah. It's the same project, and you can deny it.
They're going to be counting on receiving phase two money.
Well, you shouldn't count on it until you, the application, you shouldn't count on it until the application's approved.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's totally up to you. You guys have that control. You
the, can just say, hey, when. There's an airplane located. Have you seen that? There's a military plane located in that park?
In Valley?
Yeah.
I did a site visit several years ago, but I don't remember it specifically.
Okay, well, it's owned by the, obviously, it's owned by the federal government, and they not enthusiastic about moving it, and I was just curious, if, has there been any kind of conversations about it?
Bill, if you have the application from Valley, I think that the master plan that they've shown.
I don't see it on the.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing that specifically in reviewing this. They have a, on the right side, there's a list of 18 features. Yeah. And I cannot remember if a military plane is included. Yeah. So I'm sorry, I don't have a clear answer on that.
Okay. Could you get one?
Yes, absolutely. And so the question is just what is the future of the plane that is currently in the park?
Yeah, I believe it's in that park. I'm.
There's a tiny airplane. It's outside of the. Outside of where they're working.
Lower right, it sounds like.
Oh, thank you. Okay, so yeah. That is not part of the project?
Must not be.
So I guess I would anticipate it's going to remain outside the deadline. But if you'd like, we could still find clarification from the city about that.
Yeah. The reason I'm a little bit hesitant on this is that I got bombarded in the last few days about from people not knowing anything about this after I mentioned to them that this was coming, you know, we'll be talking about it, and some happy, unhappy residents learning those could be a amphitheater or whatever, you know, and they're not really that aware of what's going on. There seems to be a hush-hush mentality to some degree. And generally, over the years, when there's a project like this, they have called me in, you know, and particularly if we're contributing to it, you know, to talk to me about it, to get my vote, and there hasn't been one word said to me about it, so that kind of makes me a little bit concerned. Anyway, that's all. Thank you.
We have a motion on the floor.
I move
we
go with staff recommendation.
And second.
That's a second. Jim made the
motion. He made the motion.
Yeah,
he already made the motion.
Yeah.
Yeah, he already made the motion.
Second my motion?
Yeah.
Great.
I thought
he interrupted.
Second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Roll call.
Jeff?
Yes.
Teasner?
No.
Thompson?
Yes.
And Sherman?
Aye. That completes my report.
Sorry.
One more.
Yeah, there are more programs.
Two more?
Two more, actually. So the next program has a very long name, the Flood Mitigation Planning and Mapping Assistance Program. In general, this is the, as it says, planning and mapping. This is not for construction. And we did receive one application. We do not always receive applications into this program, but it is included in the letter each year. On the left side, let's see. I'm sorry, maybe I didn't put a bookmark on that one, Bill. Maybe scroll down from there. Apologies if I missed that one. Actually, is it included? Do you have a binder? Is the
Fort Calhoun's for next?
Okay. Apologies that that's not included there. Well, I can describe it for you then. In Takema, the Northeast Takema Urban Drainage Master Plan is an attempt to understand the existing drainage challenges that are occurring in Takema. Again, this is for planning and mapping type activities, not for construction. They have had recurring water on streets that causes challenges for people driving, and they're looking for a way to reduce the risk to people during large rain events in kind of the northeast part of the area. Again, I apologize that it's not somehow included in the attachment. I will figure out why that's not included there and make sure we get that information to you. But this program is administered by Lori Laster. It is included in the annual cost share letter, but Lori has talked to Takema about this, is aware, and will be prepared to provide technical assistance to them in addition to the financial assistance toward the planning effort that they've requested funding for. So recommendation is to cost share at 50%, $38,750.
I move the staff recommendation.
Do we have a motion?
Second.
Anyone wish to speak to the item? Roll call.
Teasner?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
Sherman?
Aye.
Next is the Trails Assistance Program, and this one is Fort Calhoun with the first project. Fort Calhoun applied for a federal funding toward a collection of projects that you can see kind of spread out all over the entire community. So this is a big simultaneous effort. They were funded under the State Trails Assistance Program at 80%, and they are, by extension, then asking for 50% of the local cost share toward this collection of projects. So the dollar amounts there are relatively large. The Fort Calhoun estimated local cost is $690,000, so that's only 20%. So they did receive a few million dollars toward this from federal funding, and they are then asking for half of the local share, which is within the program guidelines from us. That's $345,000. So this includes a kind of comprehensive set of projects, both east and west of the main thoroughfare through town, 14th Street, to provide connectivity to existing projects. And we've partnered with them on several different projects that have all been connected over the years. So, you know, kudos to them for a great master plan that they've been working on for the last 6 or 8 years. And they are finding funding, federal funding, other funding sources, and bringing it into the community and making very significant investments. And this is more of that same type of work. Second is from Omaha Public Schools at the new Westview High School. And so here's the view of the campus. And if you scroll down just a little bit, you can see at the lower left portion of the map, just north of Ida Street, they are planning an arboretum. And so this is the next page, has some additional information about the trail network in, maybe one more, I apologize. A trail network within the arboretum adjacent to the school. So this would be used for some outdoor classroom activities, also kind of a natural space for students and members of the community to visit. It's on the other side of Vane Street, but it will be operated and maintained by Omaha Public Schools and available to the public, which is in line with our program guidelines, Omaha Public Schools being a government agency that is eligible for our cost share programs and taking responsibility for the ongoing operations and maintenance after the project is constructed. So the request here is $90,312 toward the $180,000 estimated total project cost. Next is SID 305, in Sarpy County, Pioneer View. And here's a map of the area. You can see Cornhusker Road is on the bottom of the map. The Big Papio Creek is on the right of the map. Existing neighborhoods are identified, and so this is kind of an ongoing residential development. Kind of the street network is already in place, and houses are being constructed out there. And so the request is for cost share to connect from Settlers Creek across 66th Street, starting on the east side of 66th Street, following the creek, Fricky Creek, through the neighborhood, and then connecting across a new dam structure that will replace the existing kind of old farm pond structure, and then two additional segments of connectivity up in the neighborhood in outlots behind the residential locations. So this is a nice neighborhood connection to a broader network of trails. You can see from Settlers Creek to the west, runs all the way over to the high school. And on the map, we also have identified the potential for a future trail connection along the creek down to the Big Papio, and then down the right or west levee on the Big Papio down to Cornhusker and across to the Big Papio Trail. That would provide significantly expanded access for everyone in this part of Papillion. There is no current plan for that, but that is a potential future project. So we communicated with Pioneer View at length about how their project should be designed to accommodate that potential future connectivity. And they were glad to look at that vision for the future as well. That would bring benefit to the residents in the neighborhood. The total cost here is $506,688, and the request is 50% or $253,344. I think the original application sheet had a different number on it. Prior to the application deadline, they did submit an updated cost estimate, and so the numbers that are reflected in the recommendation are different from what was on the original application sheet, but I believe the updated numbers are also included in your packet. And the last project is South Sioux City C Street Trail Expansion. South Sioux City has also had a comprehensive set of projects over the years. They have trails kind of all throughout the community, and they are looking to provide this trail connection from the park at the top, you can see the ball field, to the school at the bottom. So this would be used by students to help them get safe access to the school. You can see another trail running along the bottom side of the page to the west. And so this is extending the existing trail network aligned with their community-wide master plan. And the request here is $127,452. So the total dollar amount in this program requested is $816,297, and that is less than last year. We had a few very large applications last year, and so this is well within the normal amount of cost share requested through this program.
I move staff's recommendation.
We have a motion.
Second.
Second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Roll call.
Thompson?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
Keezer?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Aye.
And last note, in the packet, you can see that the lake dredging program and the other long name program, the flood mitigation assistance program, also included, and we did not receive any applications, so there is no recommendation for projects in those two programs this year. Thank you.
Thanks, Eric.
Now you're done.
Thank you. Now you're done. We're done.
Does that mean we're adjourned?
Yeah.
I think that's what it means.
Fred kept trying to get out of here. Reeling him back.